one of our own on WNR.
The sound of Waterford. WLR. WLR.
In this fourth program from the second series of One of Our Own, Rosemary Ryan is interviewed by Catherine Foley about her passion for the museum she helped establish within the Waterford Viking Triangle. Roseanne Foley recorded and edited the series, which is produced by OnCorsacock.
This was made with funding from Commissioner Na Man and the television license fee.
Rosemary Ryan is keeper of Waterford treasures, five different museums within the city's Viking Triangle. At the start of our conversation, she told me about her earliest links with the city.
I was born actually in Waterford City, unlike my siblings who were actually born in Carrick and Shore.
Yeah. And did you grow up in Carrick and Shore?
Actually the County Waterford side. My dad was a teacher in Crahana, which is the Carrick Beg side of Carrick and Shore, so County Waterford just by a hairskin.
Yeah, and where did you go to national school? Was it your
I went, I, yes, there? Yes, yeah. I went, all my national school was in that small country school, which was a lovely place.
Rosemary's father, John Ryan, was principal of Crahana National School in Carrick-on-Shore, and she recalls he was a much respected and well-liked teacher.
So I think my dad was very much appreciated. Of course, you know yourself, Catherine, you don't become aware of these things until your parents' funerals and wakes, and then you hear all the stories.
Do you remember him as a teacher in the classroom?
Oh,
what
I
was
do.
He like?
I do. I had him for 2 years, but obviously as principal, you know, he had a big influence on the whole school. Yeah, I mean, for me and my brother and sister, it was just, we didn't know anything else, you know. But other people, of course, think it's strange to be taught by your parent, you know. I mean, obviously it's done. So I would have had him teaching me for 2 years out of the eight. And there were two other teachers. He was very interested in Dukas, really, in every way. And he was a great teacher. I think others, as I said, it's not just me saying that he was a great teacher, and he was before his time. He had actually a degree in archaeology, and he had done that by night, as you could, when he was teaching in Dublin, when he had first come out from the training college. And so he loved Irish, he was good at Irish. He loved Irish, he loved singing, he loved archaeology, history. I was dragged all over all the monuments and all the abbeys and all over Ireland, really. And he had friends who worked, one as an archaeologist and one who worked in the National Museum. And when that lady would come down the countryside, she'd be sent, you know, on National Museum business. And We would get a very rare day off school, and my brother would be sent down a souterrain, which of course could have collapsed on him. You know, the like wouldn't be done today, you know, under health and safety. So I had all that, and we just saw that as normal.
Maura Gall, Rosemary's mother, was from Waterford City. Rosemary is proud of the fact that the family name Gall appears in the Great Parchment Book of Waterford, which is a record of the city's medieval history.
Yeah, she was born in Waterford City, and she had six brothers, and her father was an electrical contractor. A lot of people know the company of old, Keating and Gall. Her surname was Gall, and as you probably could guess, the Gauls come up in the records of Waterford, in the parchment book, for example, in the 1300s and 1400s. So they were undoubtedly French, who were Gauls, they were foreigners, they were French.
What was her first name?
Her name was Maura Gall. Yeah, and she grew up in the city.
And what was she like, Rosemary?
Yeah, she was amazing.
What were her passions?
She had started working in a shop after school. She was apprenticed, of course, by her dad, and he had to pay money. But she didn't find that. She didn't think she wanted to spend her life working in a shop. And she actually joined up with a woman who came recruiting to Waterford for nurses in 1947. So she was the first of her family to go over to England to train as a nurse with nuns in the south of England. Went on the boat, of course. and went down by train all the way down through England into Devon and then Surrey. No food in the, available in any of the railway stations, so the chocolate her mother had given her was very welcome. 1947. She trained for 4 years by nuns, and then she had to give them a year. Then she did midwifery in Leeds, hard year, north of England, an eye-opener. Yeah, she had seen the world,
Has she passed on, Rosemary?
Yes, she died 2 years ago. Just 2 years ago. Yeah, she was 96 and my dad was 93 when he died. So they both were very long-lived.
And did she work when you were growing up married?
No. So she'd had a career before she got married and then it all came to an end. She had worked actually all over the world. She had worked, she worked in Ireland, she worked in England, she worked in the Channel Islands and got married there, and she worked for a year in Vancouver when they were celebrating 100 years of being a city. Imagine 1957 to 1958. So she went on a boat. She had an absolute ball on a beautiful boat.
She must have
found
she had lived in Carrick-on-Shore, Catherine. Sure, very quiet, did she?
Catherine, you couldn't have said it better. Her life, you might say, in a way, you know, just completely got completely just reduced. And she just threw herself into married life. She was older. She had lived. I think she was, to a large extent, she had done her, had her freedom.
Rosemary did her second level schooling at the Mercy Convent in Carrick-on-Shore. As she recounts, those days included some of her childhood's most memorable excursions.
In secondary, did you carry on in Carrick-on-Shore?
Carrick-on-Shore, yeah.
The Mercy Convent.
But
you were a day student,
yes,
were you?
Yes, oh yeah. And I had been brought on an archaeological society outing to Castletown Cox near Carrick-on-Shore, you know, these day outs. And I saw that the Dubrefnys had recently moved there and they saved that house, you know, Catherine, because it had been bought by a local farmer and he was going to take the roof off because, of course, he was paying rates. Brian Dubrefny, they bought it for a song. And the Dubrefnys had just moved in, they'd moved from Italy. And his books were all over the floor in the library. So I wrote to him as a 15-year-old offering to help him put his books in order.
How motivated you were, Rosemary, at that age. 15 and you wrote to this family.
Oh, it was all chance. These things happen.
Everything about Carrick-on-Shore growing up.
Yeah. But I did grow up on the Clancy Brothers music. My parents knew Bobby particularly and Myra. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when now here down in Ring, down in Ballinanowl, I just feel very close to the Clancys, you know.
And do you sing, Rosemary?
Do a little bit of singing, yeah.
Do you really?
Yeah,
what would you
the
sing? What
I'd
you
sing Sliabh na Mban now, for example.
Oh, give us a verse of it.
Is Alam Fenog Bulan Leud the Galler Whale Bog is Nakir the Slod Marathon Merlig Egden of Game Ding Is a Rona Geni Low Peak.
Once Rosemary had completed her second level schooling, she decided to do teacher training in Dublin.
So I followed my dad into teacher training. I loved it at the time, but I didn't manage to turn myself into a teacher. I think I probably, again, in retrospect, I probably did great work, but I just was far too young.
Yeah. But so where'd you go to St. Pat's in Dublin?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, where my father had been. Yeah, you know, to be in Dublin. And
was Alan Titley there at the time?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
And I really... You know, I shouldn't have been there, but it was marvellous and we had wonderful lecturers who were so passionate. I think, again, I was terribly fortunate. I mean, yeah, St. Pat's was, marvellous lecturers, you know, one after the other, passionate about education and turning us into professionals. Yeah, all those people and philosophy, and yeah, I loved it.
And what about living in Dublin at that stage?
Yeah, so I was living in, of course, you know, in an award-winning building that they'd built, student accommodation. So it was a great time to be there.
Lovely. So when you graduated from there, were you teaching?
Yeah, I taught, but I was a complete and utter failure, a fiasco.
Rosemary decided not to pursue a career in the teaching profession, and in 1984, an opportunity to work for the writer and art historian Brian de Breffni presented itself.
When did you begin to realise you weren't going to be a primary school teacher, and that maybe you would pursue studies and go and follow the route of
it was all chance, Catherine, actually. You know, I was just so lucky. I left teaching and I had no plan. And I was just very fortunate with who I met, whether it's karma.
It's often the way, isn't it?
It is. And then when I left teaching, Brian de Breffni, he offered me a full-time job. So I was working at Irish Arts Review, arts magazine, in the 1980s, which were a tough time to be doing anything in the whole arts cultural area. Mm. He just needed lots of admin done, you know, and I just worked with another local lady, and we were kind of looking after his affairs, and we were working on this arts magazine. So he had lived in Italy, but he was Irish, and his father was probably French, Russian, his mother was Irish. Yeah. And they had famous parties there in the 1980s, weekend parties, and
an employee, were you?
I was sort of attending. Half exposed to that, you know, so yeah. It was quite an eye opener. Yeah. Now my mother, you know, she had, from her experiences all over the world, she'd had a far broader, wider experience than my dad, and she had taste, and in a way I was finding something that I actually had a great feel for.
It was around this time that Rosemary married and began family life. But as she recalls, even as a young married woman, she was drawn back into the world of research and antiquity.
I was living in Carrick on Shore for a while, and then in South County Kilkenny, and I got married and I had two lovely daughters, and I just needed to do some work and wanted to do something, and I just was very fortunate to get taken on. I just got pulled into the ambit of Eamon McEnany, who was another huge influence on my life. And it was it was City Council just looking for people in the whole arts and culture area. And it was 1997 or 1998. And Eamon was going full throttle to open Waterford Treasures in the Granary building on the Quays in Waterford, which opened in 1999. And he just needed help. And I started in the archive in Waterford City, and then when the archivist left, I just got slowly pulled into his ambit, into the vortex. I don't know what the words are. And what do they say? The rest is a whirlwind journey ever since.
Did you enjoy that whole experience working with AIM and seeing the development of the Viking Triangle, the opening of all those? Will you tell me about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, it has been a whirlwind. It was such an education.
Rosemary told me then about what it was like working with the inspirational figure of Eamon McEnany.
Eamon McEnany, he has such an extraordinary skill set. It's really unmatched, you know. It's certainly not usual in museum directors, because he's both practical and can get things done, but he's practical, and he likes to do actual practical stuff. But he is a medieval historian, a superb one, and he has also vision. And they don't come around very often. And so many things I think all of us in the Waterford Treasury staff, we learned so much with Eamon. Under Eamon, we did things we didn't know we were able to do.
Well, it must have been amazing to see Waterford change physically, like before those areas were developed, before those museums. I mean, there are five museums under your remit now, aren't there? There weren't 25 years ago.
No, there weren't. No, it's quite extraordinary, the pace of development. And so we started in the granary. You know, there was the city centre was derelict, and therefore a huge area, all under the City Square Shopping Centre today, in the Arundel Square area, was available for excavation, for archaeological excavation conducted by Orla Scully and others. And what started to come out of the ground surpassed all expectations in terms of quality, range of objects. So Eamon was the man for the moment. Waterford is the first place that these archaeological objects had were not swallowed up, did not just go back into the National Museum. And Eamon was instrumental in that, and he put them on display almost immediately in Waterford City, in temporary displays. He had also put on a display of the Waterford City charters, because Waterford had a superb municipal collection. We had the sword and cap gifted by Henry VIII, no less. We had the sword gifted by Edward IV and earlier, and maces, and there was the cannon gun, which comes from the siege by Perkin Warbeck in 1495. And then the churches of Waterford had superb church silverware plate, which Eamon borrowed, and of course the extraordinary Italian Flemish vestments, which are probably the meaning of my life, as I always say. That is the genesis, really, of Waterford Treasures. And Eamon saw the potential for driving tourism and regenerating, you know, that using tourism and a visitor attraction as a catalyst for regeneration in Waterford. And that's quite something.
Rosemary continued her education as a mature student, completing a postgraduate diploma in museum studies at the University of Ulster.
Thanks to the Heritage Council, they put me on an online museum studies postgraduate. Yeah.
And was that lovely? Did you love it?
Yeah. And I mean, I had taken history as my subject in college. Yeah, I mean, I love that. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's good to study. Now, things have changed a lot, and obviously young people study. I think it's good to have a basic discipline and basic degree of history or archaeology or art history. But it's then the museum studies actually covers all these things anyway, and certainly there's a lot to know. And there has been enormous development in museum studies since the likes of these courses have started.
Rosemary, now keeper of Waterford Treasures, spoke to me about the five museums within the Viking Triangle, all under the Waterford City and County Council Museum umbrella.
My office is in the Bishop's Palace.
You left the granary.
Yeah. So, It was very. We had really optimised the granary, you know, and we had one piece of the vestments conserved. For 17 years, we raised the money and we got those vestments, that entire set of vestments conserved. So we had only one. First, we had one piece, one of the copes, on display in the granary, and that gallery was really tiny. And then we got a second one conserved, and the gallery was tiny, and Eamon knew that he wanted to get the rest of the set all conserved and displayed. So the vestments and the charter roll are the centrepieces of the medieval museum, and Eamon wanted to display them properly because they deserved it. That was really one of the main catalysts for moving down into the Viking Triangle, taking over the Bishop's Palace, which was Engineering Department of Waterford Council, and building the new medieval museum and starting afresh, where we could have coach parking, where you could make a really a visitor attraction of scale and, you know, which would have an impact, fit for purpose, fit for the 21st century. So we opened the Bishop's Palace and a new exhibition in Reginald's Tower. We actually also curate the exhibition there. That was 2011. Then the Medieval Museum we opened in 2012. And then King of the Vikings was 2017, the virtual reality of the King of the Vikings. 2019, we revamped the palace. 2021, with the acquisition of the enormous collection of Irish silver and the clocks and watches donated by the two extraordinarily generous men. That was 2021, we opened the two museums there. And then last year we opened the Irish Wake Museum, close to it. But we have an extraordinary friends scheme in the museum, and the friends have provided a lot of financial and moral support over the years. They and Waterford people generally, there is a very strong sense of pride in what's been achieved, and what's been achieved in the Viking Triangle. Council has an awful lot that it can take credit for. Obviously, Eamon working with Rupert Maddock, who's an extraordinary man. You know, he was the architect of the Medieval Museum, the City Council architect, City and County Council architect. And he was recently awarded the Gandon Gold Medal, which is the highest award given by the Royal Institute of Architects of Ireland. It's the first time that a local authority architect has won that. And they are on loan, of course, I should say, courtesy of the National Museum of Ireland. Waterford Treasures is a designated museum. It's actually a branch of the National Museum of Ireland.
Rosemary couldn't contain her passion for one of the most innovative museums in Ireland, the Irish Museum of Time at Greyfriars Church in Waterford. It opened in 2020.
So the Museum of Time is all about the clocks and watches, about horology. And it was because Waterford Treasures was already very successful with the Bishop's Palace, and we obviously hadn't touched the modern story at all, you know, 19th, 20th century Waterford, which is so interesting. And that was where the Bishop's Palace, which was built in 1743, was the place to display, to do displays of 18th century Waterford, Ireland. And these two extraordinary men who had collected all their lives, clocks and watches, they decided to donate their collections to Waterford Treasures on the strength of Waterford Treasures being dynamic, and it was very much because of Eamon. And we, as a result, received these absolutely astonishing collections of clocks and watches and timepieces. I suppose these two men are collectors, and they're really passionate collectors and expert and superb horologists. And this is a very tightly knit small group in Ireland. Horologists tend to be very connected all over the world, and they're very tightly knit circles, and they speak the same language. Coleman Curran first approached us and offered his collection because he really wanted, because he has no children, he and his wife Elizabeth Clooney, who's Liz is a Waterford woman, she was a teacher, he didn't want his collection to be dissipated, which is what happens, you know, when people pass away and they have no children. And he offered his collection, and then David Bowles, who no one had seen the extent of David's collection of clocks and watches, he very thoroughly checked us out and offered his collection, which we still haven't even got to the bottom of yet. He keeps coming back with more and more wonderful timepieces, better than what is already on display, so we need to expand. And David is also additionally a benefactor, but a modest man. His ancestor actually was a Methodist minister in Waterford, which is nice. And Waterford, so that's his connection to Waterford. He grew up in Dublin. He has kind of taken Waterford to his heart, and Waterford has taken him to his heart, because actually Waterford really owes him an enormous debt,
and
that he entrusted us, you know.
Do these two collectors, do they visit the Museum of Time, and do they kind of enjoy the fact that their collection is on display? Are they delighted?
Yes, they visit all the time, and we benefit from their expertise. We couldn't do it without them. In fact, they give freely of their time and expertise. There's a couple of others as well. And they come regularly, and they come all the time,
so
and they're
which
welcome.
Which of the museums of the collections fascinates you most, Rosemary?
That's a really hard question, Catherine.
They're like
your I love the Vikings. I love it all. I'm not any great specialist. I mean, the vestments, as I say, they're probably the meaning of my life.
The vestments in the medieval museum.
Yeah.
Hanging. They're like ghosts in the darkness.
So that's to preserve them and protect them.
Yes,
certain conditions they need, you know.
And what is it about them that fascinates you?
Well, I mean, I love textiles and I love linen and I love silk, and that's what they're made of. I mean, they are cloth of gold. It's actually real gold thread. They're worth a fortune.
As a final question, I asked Rosemary to talk to me about the aspect of her work that inspires her most of all.
I mean, at the end of the day, education, learning is what inspires me. And I'm in that space. And if I can, so my work is to promote that. Even if I don't have anything like as much contact with the public as I would like anymore, through just sheer workload, I don't have enough, you know, I love the visitors and I love sharing with them. And it is a two-way thing. And I do believe very strongly and passionately in the idea of the museum being a safe space where people can reflect. And they can have a very well-rounded, nourishing, all-sensory experience with strangers or with family. And they're refreshed by that. But they may be a little bit challenged, if only that they're being stretched a little bit. And I believe strongly in that humanist role for a museum. And in fact, museums have a role in that whole social justice, equality, democracy, democratizing mission. That's so important. And you know, we can't be anyway complacent about our democracy.
Thank you very much. That was fascinating. Thanks, Rosemary.
This was made with funding from Commissioner Mann and the television license fee.